connected.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Casey in Greenville, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service DOAA Newscast, July the 18th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Despite a growing movement to reduce the world's greenhouse gas emissions to zero by 2050, some scientists say the net zero pledges do not go far enough to counter the risk of climate change. More in this Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Pulitzer Center on Crisis Report and Commonwealth News Service collaboration.
They argue the net zero goal lacks specified targets for emissions and relies too much on technology to capture CO2 rather than force fossil fuel companies to reduce pollution. Assistant Professor of Environment and Sustainability at the University at Buffalo, Dr. Holly Buck, says most technologies run at small scale, are expensive to operate, and lack the capacity to reach net zero targets.
Carbon removal capacity is going to be limited by various things like land or energy inputs. We can't count on building such a big carbon removal infrastructure to negate those remaining emissions.
Buck says net zero goals lack clarity but are still just one part of the climate solution. She says greater efforts should be made towards a clean energy transition as well as climate adaptation, such as building more cooling centers and preparing coastal cities for sea level rise. I'm Catherine Carley reporting.
Meantime, President Biden tested positive for COVID on Wednesday, according to the White House, forcing him to cancel his event in Las Vegas and likely sidelining him for the days following the conclusion of the Trump nominating convention in Milwaukee. The White House press secretary said in a statement that earlier today, he tested positive for COVID. She added he is vaccinated and boosted and he is experiencing mild symptoms. And biofuels are painted as a greener energy alternative to fossil fuels, but a new study shows the industry produces plenty of their own air pollutants.
American biofuel plants reported emitting nearly 13 million pounds of hazardous air pollution in 2022, according to a report from the Environmental Integrity Project, trailing only slightly behind the 14.5 million pounds that oil refineries released. Tom Pelton with the nonprofit says that South Dakota's 16 biofuel plants, which mostly make ethanol from corn, produce about 1.7 million pounds of greenhouse gases each year and 350,000 pounds of air pollution, including known carcinogens. Biofuel production is concentrated in the Midwest, and Pelton says people living nearby could suffer health impacts.
It's hard to detect and hard to track, but a person living downwind from one of these plants might have, you know, a few percentage points more chance of getting cancer over their lifetime.
The report recommends that the EPA increase monitoring and control of air pollutants, improve the accuracy of emissions reporting, and end current exemptions for ethanol manufacturers under the Clean Air Act. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
The report suggests ending government subsidies for biofuels. This is Public News Service. And two new studies find that without sustained intervention, California may permanently lose big sections of old-growth great sequoia groves.
The majestic trees only grow on the western slope of the Sierra Nevada. Since 2015, 20% of them have died, most in three megafires in 2020 and 2021. David Soderberg with the U.S. Geological Survey, co-author of one of the studies, says the blazes incinerated many of the older seed-bearing trees.
You're getting much larger patches of fires burning at what's called high severity. So you have this kind of bad combination for the sequoias where many more of the mature trees are dying and there's many fewer of the seedlings regenerating.
The studies show that there are substantially fewer seedlings than in the past. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And advocates for academic freedom are battling in court against Florida's claim that a professor's speech is a government speech.
Arguments in the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, 11th Circuit, last month raised alarms when prominent attorney Charles J. Cooper, representing Florida, said the state can insist that professors not espouse and endorse viewpoints contrary to the state's. Adriana Novoa is a professor of Latin American history at the University of South Florida, who is challenging the Stop Woke Act and warns people should be very concerned.
It's indoctrination, which is ironic because that's what they say that we are doing right now. So basically, any governor is not only about this one. Any governor in the future can decide what will be the viewpoints that will be promoted in the classroom.
The Stop Woke Act, struck down but under appeal, banned school instruction and workplace training suggesting privilege or oppression based on race, sex, or national origin. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Finally, our Joe Ulori lets us know a new initiative in Indiana is helping eliminate dangerous habitats in the homes of pregnant or parenting students.
The Stronger Tomorrows program teaches young parents how to avoid suffocation and strangulation dangers created in baby cribs and by bed sharing. Alma Figueroa is a case manager for Stronger Tomorrows and says her mission is clear: help students feel prepared and stay on track to graduate. The Stronger Tomorrows program also ensures they know their rights under Title IX and connects them to a vital community support.
If their babies are not okay, or if their home life, something is not, you know, going well at home, then we know that that's going to really affect their success in school. And so making sure that their babies are well, their parenting is essential for them to be successful.
Garola says Stronger Tomorrows is making a difference because of partners such as the Shepherd Community Center.
This is by Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and you can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, July 18th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 71 in Red Hook. Air quality will be good today and skies start out a bit cloudy, but bring those sunglasses because this afternoon they head on out. A high of 82 lingers most of the afternoon. Overnight temperatures fall to 59 somewhat muggy degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 83 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 62 degrees. It will be cool but muggy. Saturday, high of 85 at 3 p.m. Chance for some rain in the afternoon after things begin to cool. Overnight will be dry and we see a low of 64 degrees. Sunday, a high of 88, dry and mostly sunny all day. Dew points in the 60s will make it feel pretty humid. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:49 a.m., low tide at 7:50 a.m., high tide again at 1:23 p.m., then low tide once again at 7:38 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:14 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see three relatively weak Hadouken were released yesterday. They are expected to combine and arrive around Saturday, causing a G1 magnetic storm. X-class flare chances are at 15%. Plasma winds will be slow at 350 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair only below 14 MHz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 275, And this has been the Better Weather for Thursday, July 18th, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Bartender, let's make it a double.
tide from the turning of the tide. Did they run their fingers up and down the shabby dress? Did they find some tender moment there in your caress? The boys all say you look so fine, but don't come back for a second time, or you can't hide from the turning of the tide.
Monday, July 10th, the Eco-Action Committee of the Green Party of the United States held a webinar as to why carbon capture is a false climate solution. One, however, that is receiving tens of billions of dollars in grants and subsidies from United States taxpayers. The idea is to remove carbon from pollution before it goes into the atmosphere, thus allowing fossil fuels to continue to be burned. However, despite tens of billions of dollars in investments and decades of research, carbon capture remains unviable. And since most pollution is located in low-income and communities of color, it is a major environmental justice issue. I was a moderator of the event and start with a brief introduction. We then hear from Carolyn Rafsenberger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. We finish with Jim Walsh of Food and Water Watch. Carbon capture and sequestration, also known as storage, is the process of capturing carbon dioxide formed during power generation and industrial processes and storing it so that it is not emitted into the atmosphere. The recent Inflation Reduction Act invested $12 billion in CSS, whereas the earlier bipartisan infrastructure bill had another $5 billion. With global carbon emissions of around 420 parts per million, far above the target of 350 parts per million, scientists argue that some level of carbon removal will be necessary, especially since the IPCC's proposed timeline for emission cuts are inadequate to keep warming below the 1.5 degree target. Natural carbon removal options, which have widespread support, include regenerative agriculture practices that increase soil carbon content, such as compost and cover cropping, and improve grazing management, reforestation, and the restoration of coastal and marine habitats. Yeah. The biggest CCS projects in the country have been multi-billion dollar failures. Carbon capture would not reduce the other forms of deadly air pollution created by fossil fuel plants or the water contamination caused by fracking or the toxic waste created by drilling. Carbon capture primarily exists only because of massive subsidies from the federal government. And most climate activists oppose carbon capture proposals that seek to remove carbon before it escapes in the atmosphere as a thinly disguised way to continue to allow for the burning of fossil fuels. I'm going to start off with Carolyn Raffensperger, who's on the Science and Environmental Health Network. Carolyn, she convenes a national network on carbon capture and storage called the COT Plenary.
And I want to start with, standard joke, right? Isn't that the way we're supposed to start talks like this? So an engineer, a state treasurer, and an oil executive walk into a bar. Mm-hmm. The joke is on the public, because what they were discussing was essentially the downturn in oil in states like North Dakota or Texas or Wyoming or any of the states whose treasuries and their state budgets are largely funded by oil. So we've been drilling for oil for a long time. And, you know, the initial wells, the primary oil drilling, and there's just a geyser of oil that comes out of the ground in these literal geysers. And then, you know, it kind of depletes those wells. And so they come up with a secondary methods of getting oil out of the ground. Those are usually water or something else. Well, the executive and the state treasurer and the engineer were discussing the problem of these wells starting to run dry, that there was no more oil that they were able to get through the use of common means. And so they came up with a joke on the public, which is that they were going to capture CO2 from things like ethanol plants in states like Iowa, and they were going to capture this CO2 as it was emitted from the distilleries of the ethanol plants, and then they were going to compress it, ship it through vast networks of pipelines. The pipelines in one network, like the Summit Carbon Pipeline in the Midwest, can range from 4 inches to 24 inches. And then they're going to take it to a state like North Dakota, and they're going to put it in the ground. And the reason that the engineer and the oil executive and the treasurer were discussing this is because CO2 is a phenomenal solvent that can get the last drops of oil out after they have fracked it and after they've used all, you know, the primary and secondary means for drilling for oil. CO2 acts like a solvent and can get the very last drops out of wells that would otherwise be depleted. And they cooked up a scheme. They're going to have the public pay for it through a tax credit. But what has happened now is that we have created a program through the Inflation Reduction Act and some laws before that, that will pay polluters for their CO2. We are essentially paying the polluter to capture CO2, which Bill McKibben has called the most dangerous substance on earth, something that is a toxic chemical, a material in its own right, but more importantly, it's an asphyxiant. And when it meets water, it creates carbonic acid, the water in your eyes or whatever else. This is a terribly leaky system. So when you compress it, when you ship it through these huge, vast networks of pipelines connecting, say, 40 ethanol plants through this incredible system with pump stations and valves and all of that, and then they take it to a state like North Dakota or Texas or Wyoming, and they say they're going to put it underground. But most of this CO2 is used for what's called enhanced oil recovery, that joke that's being played on the public, and we are paying for it. So they can get a tax credit for taking that oil and using it to extract the last drops of oil that would stay in the ground but for CO2. And CO2 is expensive. So there's about 5,000 current miles of CO2 pipelines, but those pipelines take CO2 that naturally occurs in the ground, and then they pump it out and ship it to a well site and use it for enhanced oil recovery. They want to expand that whole system to thousands, maybe 90,000 miles of new CO2 pipelines, concentrating that CO2, which is incredibly hazardous if those pipelines rupture, and then put it in the ground. And because they don't need it all at once, they can store it, they can sequester it and get a lot more money, $85 a ton, or they can use it in for CO2, for EOR, enhanced oil recovery. So essentially, they cooked up a scheme in that bar. And the bar is a joke, but we know that the fossil fuel industry is behind this whole idea of carbon capture and storage, of capturing CO2 from cement plants or ethanol plants or refineries, compressing it, shipping it through these pipelines that are leaky, getting a whole lot of money for it, and they can buy and sell those credits, and then putting it in the ground, either for enhanced oil recovery or for storage. And it allows the fossil fuel industry to keep those refineries and coal plants open because they're saying it's neutral. They're capturing the CO2. So it is maintaining the life of these fossil fuel plants indefinitely. And so you can see that this is largely a scam that has been perpetrated on the public in the name of climate change.
Next, we hear from Jim Walsh, Policy Director for Food and Water Watch, who discusses needed policy changes.
Some federal policy engagement opportunities, and I think the tax credits are a very big, important place for us to be talking about this. I think it's an area for bipartisan opposition to build because it is wasteful, because it's not transparent. And it's really what underlines the entire industry of these tax credits. You have a lot of subsidies coming from the Department of Energy. The tax credits are so much more massive and have so much more potential to generate revenue for the oil drilling and other things the industry wants to do than the actual loans that are coming in grants and programs coming out of the Department of Energy. So I think the tax credits are a core important place for us to focus. Pipeline safety is another area where it's important for us to be focusing on these efforts. The pipelines are extremely dangerous. It's a major public health issue and another place to think about potentially moving these, pushing back on these policies. And then the larger conversation about what are the actual standards that we have for these operations and who's enforcing them? Because right now, as Maggie talked about, there's really no real oversight for this industry.
This is Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
It's time again to recap the latest news from the solar PV industry, compiled by the American Solar Energy Society. I'm Jay Warmke with solarpvtraining.com, and this is the news from the solar industry for the week of July 14th. A new report from the American Council on Renewable Energy has come up with what might be considered the obvious, which is when you impose tariffs on solar modules and cells, then the price of those solar modules and cells may actually go up. A study found that the impact of the recently enacted 50% tariff on solar modules and cells that come in from China and four Southeast Asian nations will have a significant impact on the price of solar over the coming years, increasing the cost per watt between 10 and 15 cents per watt, which is going to about double the cost of solar modules here in the U.S. In May, the Biden administration had imposed a 50% tariff on modules that come in from Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, and Malaysia, as well as from China. In 2023, 88% of all of the solar modules that were installed here in the U.S. were actually imported. And of those imported modules, 84% of them came from those four countries. Despite a huge investment that was spurned by incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act for domestic manufacturing, actually imported solar panels increased from 2022 to 2023 by 40%. Toledo Solar has announced that they're going to be shutting down their operations in Ohio. This company manufactures thin film cadmium telluride solar panels. Now, their nearby competitor, First Solar, which is the largest U.S. solar manufacturer, they also actually invented the cadmium telluride technology. They specialize in these thin film panels for utility scale systems. Now, in recent years, Toledo Solar had announced plans to begin to try and get this technology into the commercial as well as the residential marketplace. Now, their recent troubles began when the firm was awarded a contract to replace the solar modules that had been placed on the Ohio governor's mansion. Now, in 2004, GEO, Green Energy Ohio, had installed a small solar array on the carriage house at the governor's mansion. First solar panels were used because they were manufactured in Ohio. But in 2022, it was decided to replace these panels, and the contract was awarded to Toledo Solar. Now, First Solar was contacted to come and remove the old panels and recycle them. Well, the technician from First Solar noticed that the panels that had just been installed by Toledo Solar were, in fact, First Solar panels with the labels altered to appear to have been manufactured by Toledo Solar. And thus all the lawsuits began. Now, the scandal resulted in the management at Toledo Solar being replaced, but the firm never recovered, and now they're shutting down operations. Michigan has become the 29th state to enact legislation that prevents HOAs, or homeowners associations, from prohibiting the installation of solar within their jurisdiction. Now, that may not seem like a big deal, but 1.4 million Michiganders actually live within HOAs, or those jurisdictions, and nationwide about 75 million people live within homeowner association areas. Well, in many cases, the HOAs are very hostile to the installation of solar modules, all the way up to outright prohibiting their installation. So 29 states have enacted legislation that stops them from doing that. Now, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer is expected to sign this legislation into law this week. And the FEI has warned that as renewable energy systems become more and more prevalent, that they will also become more and more subject to cyber hacking. These hackers are looking at disrupting the generation of electricity, I guess for the fun of it, stealing trade secrets, and also ransoming critical information. Now, attacks on residential PV systems are extremely rare, but they are increasing on microgrids as well as utility scale projects. Now, the FBI has said that if you practice basic cyber hygiene, which they're saying is basically don't reuse passwords, keep all of the different systems isolated from each other, keep your software up to date, back up your data and your systems and monitor them, that should go a long way to avoiding these problems. So what do you do with an abandoned nuclear power plant? Well, perhaps what you can do is convert that thing over to solar. Now, the Department of Energy has just announced that they're working with solar developers to install a 400-megawatt system at a very large abandoned nuclear facility in Idaho. They're also looking at doing a similar project in Nevada at an abandoned nuclear power plant. Data centers are likely going to be the biggest purchaser of the energy from these systems, and they may actually want to co-locate next to these solar farms. And that is the news from the solar industry for this week. We'll see you next week.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. For decades, apartment buildings stood along the banks of Briar Creek in Charlotte, North Carolina. Over the years, the buildings flooded over and over. So about 15 years ago, hundreds of units were purchased and torn down as part of a floodplain buyout program. In their place, wetland habitat was restored. Now when it rains, the plants and rich soils help soak up water, reducing the risk of floods. Garen Bulger of the Center for Urban Policy Research at Rutgers University analyzed this and other buyout programs across the country.
If you have a proactive municipality or a buyout program, they will combine properties, they will turn that into some sort of proactive green space for your community.
But he says converting bought-out properties into natural areas requires planning and resources. Otherwise, some bought-out properties could become neglected, fenced-off lots.
And it just sort of becomes a little bit of a blight on a community, or it can be if it's not managed well.
As climate change and flooding get worse, buyouts will likely become more common. So it's important that communities plan ahead so bought-out properties in the floodplain help improve the local quality of life. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
That was Tim Hecker with the song I'm Transmitting Tonight from his 2017 album Radio Amor.
Next, we hear a song inspired by Radio Alice, one of the Italian free radio stations, or one might call pirate radio stations, that flourished in Italy in the 1970s when there was little oversight from the government. The radio stations lived in harmony and sort of worked together and did not interfere with each other. And Radio Alice was especially known for its programming that drew inspiration from the Situationists and Dada and has been described as, quote, a mix between a classical medium of militant information and a sort of art experiment in media sabotage, unquote. In 1988, the San Francisco band The Catheads released an album called Submarine with a song called Alice on the Radio. It included bass player Alan Korn, who later became a broadcast lawyer and worked with WGXC to get our FCC broadcast license. He wrote about Radio Alice in this song called Alice on the Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Environmentalists want the Environmental Protection Agency to redredge the Hudson River. This comes after the agency released its latest five-year review, saying more information is needed on the dredging efforts, although progress has been made. However, other reports show the EPA's dredging efforts failed, leaving the river riddled with PCBs. Pete Lopez with Scenic Hudson says EPA's reduction targets aren't being met.
EPA has done its best to get massive amounts out of the river, but there are massive amounts left in the river, in our opinion, that are causing PCB levels to remain persistently high and dangerous. And EPA is not addressing it. They're kicking the can down the road.
Lopez thinks the agency should investigate where high levels of PCBs are and determine how to keep fish and humans safe from them. The EPA says more annual fish data can help discern whether the cleanup is meeting the expectations of the original plan. Once the data is available, the agency will issue an addendum to the current five-year report no later than the end of 2027. A public comment period on the five-year review is being held until October, with more information available at epa.gov/HudsonRiverPCBs. The river was dredged from 2009 to 2015 to remove 30 years worth of chemicals General Electric dumped into it. Although the EPA warns against eating fish caught in the Hudson River between Troy and Hudson Falls, people still eat them, which can lead to serious health impacts. Lopez says elected officials across party lines in different state regions want the EPA to take action in cleaning up the Hudson River.
One would think that if 22 members of Congress, a U.S. senator, and leaders of the Black and Puerto Rican caucus reached out, that you would step back and think about this and maybe want to engage with them and talk with them.
Instead, he feels actions from the EPA have been pro forma correspondence, sticking to the agency's assurance that the data isn't wrong. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're tracking the 2024 election process from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee.
Our country was flooded with cheap Chinese goods, with cheap foreign labor, and in the decades to come, deadly Chinese fentanyl. Joe Biden screwed up, and my community paid the price.
Newly minted vice presidential nominee Ohio Senator J.D. Vance struck a strongly populist and America First tone at the RNC. In an anti-elite speech that attacked Wall Street and multinational corporations, the former venture capitalist marked how isolationist the Republican Party has become under former President Donald Trump. On a day devoted to foreign policy and national security, the GOP shift came into focus. Vance famously once said he doesn't care what happens to Ukraine, and in the Senate, he voted against aid to the country. But taking a more traditional line, former Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis says the U.S. has to support NATO and Ukraine.
Russia's trying to rewrite borders. I'm a firm supporter of stopping aggression and aggressive behavior from evil dictators like Vladimir Putin.
The Biden administration came in for intense criticism for how the U.S. left Afghanistan, fulfilling a deal Trump made with the Taliban. Florida Congressman and Army vet Brian Mast lost both legs in Afghanistan and called the withdrawal a failure and an embarrassment.
Nearly 2,500 of my brothers and sisters gave their lives in that war. Joe Biden disgraced their sacrifice and the sacrifice of all Afghanistan veterans.
But support for Israel's war is extremely high, with many saying the nation would be justified in reoccupying Gaza and cleansing it of the Palestinian population. Annabelle Rutledge, with a pro-Israel group at the convention, Concerned Women for America, says as tragic as the civilian deaths may be, they are to be expected during a war.
There's a devastation that happens when war happens.
The topic of international threats bled into an already regular refrain at the convention. New Mexico delegate Amy Varela connected national security to crime and migration.
Open borders and the catch and release programs that we have, and so it is directly reflected, and we have to get Trump in there to protect ourselves.
The failed assassination attempt on Trump seems to have added to his tough guy image. Virginia State Delegate Amanda Chase emphasized the need for strength in the White House.
We need to have a strong president that is physically healthy, mentally healthy, and capable of making important, serious decisions, and who is willing to sacrifice his own life, his wealth, his family, his reputation, and his businesses for this country.
In other news, President Joe Biden is self-isolating in Delaware after testing positive for COVID. The White House says he is experiencing mild symptoms. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. U.S. Senator Robert Menendez was convicted July 16th on all federal charges of conspiracy, bribery, extortion, wire fraud, obstruction, and acting as a foreign agent in schemes involving an Egyptian-American businessman and a New Jersey developer. Damian Williams, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, said this wasn't politics as usual, this was politics for profit. In exchange for cash and gold bars, Menendez used his influence as chair of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee to procure exclusive import of halal processed meat products into Egypt. The New Jersey Monitor reports that Menendez then signed off on billions in U.S. military aid to the government of Egypt, despite the country's deteriorating human rights record. The businessmen were found guilty of conspiracy and bribery, and Menendez's wife, Nadine, will face trial after completing cancer treatment. Menendez and the businessmen will be sentenced October 29th. A fifth conspirator, Jose Uribe, cooperated with authorities. Menendez pressured the New Jersey Attorney General's office to drop an insurance fraud case involving Uribe in exchange for a new Mercedes convertible for his wife, Nadine. Menendez vows to appeal. He remains on the 2024 New Jersey ballot, and while he stepped down as chair, he remains on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We have a link to the jaw-dropping corruption indictment at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, July 18th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 71 in Red Hook. Air quality will be good today and skies start out a bit cloudy, but bring those sunglasses because this afternoon they head on out. A high of 82 lingers most of the afternoon. Overnight temperatures fall to 59 somewhat muggy degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 83 at 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures fall to 62 degrees. It will be cool but muggy. Saturday, high of 85 at 3 p.m. Chance for some rain in the afternoon after things begin to cool. Overnight will be dry and we see a low of 64 degrees. Sunday, a high of 88, dry and mostly sunny all day. Dew points in the 60s will make it feel pretty humid. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:49 a.m., low tide at 7:50 a.m., high tide again at 1:23 p.m., then low tide, once again, at 7:38 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:14 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see three relatively weak Hadouken were released yesterday. They are expected to combine and arrive around Saturday, causing a G1 magnetic storm. X-class flare chances are at 15%. Plasma winds will be slow at 350 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair only below 14 MHz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 275, and this has been the better weather for Thursday, July 18th, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Next, we hear a 2022 release of radio art from Claire Rouse doing Hating It, her interpretation of the score of Salome Vogelin's track on the Paint Your Lips While Singing Your Favorite Pop Song 2022 album.
Yeah. The human being is this night, this empty nothing that contains everything in its simplicity, an unending wealth of many representations. This night, the interior of nature that exists here, pure self in phantasms. As night all around it, in which here shoots a bloody head, there another white ghastly apparition. Suddenly here before it, and just so disappears. One catches sight of this night when one looks human beings in the eye. Into night that becomes awful.
I'm gonna miss you.